Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
We think so. We think so quite a bit. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, and across from me is our good friend Bunker de France, and in Los Angeles, it's our other good friend, Todd Roberts.
It is.
Thank you so much.
It's wonderful to have you.
And we are streaming live to you from the White Stallion
Beautiful.
Ranch, just north of Tucson. Beautiful place. If you've never been out here, highly recommend it. It's a great place to come and play Western.
Get your cowboy on.
Get
your boots and your hat. Step in some cow manure and just fall back in giddy glee.
And there's plenty of it to step into.
You can even take some home. They don't care.
So today it is Movie Saturday, and what are we doing? We are doing the
what Hollywood got wrong about the West.
God bless.
Man.
Oh my God.
We could be here all week.
You know, and maybe we are and don't know it yet.
Who knows?
I'll tell you what, that's damn. I don't know what to tell you.
It's mind boggling.
My mind is boggling.
You think about it, you know, this is the kind of show that's designed to upset people. Mm-hmm. Some of them will be mad at the movie we're talking about. Some will be mad at themselves for not seeing. Most of them will be mad at us for spoiling the movie for them.
Of course.
Yeah, well, that's our job.
Well, okay, and in the meantime, it's time for you to do some...
What do you want to call it?
Frog stuff.
Frog stuff. And that's being played...
That's your cue.
Oh, that's my cue. That's being played by a very talented frog. Hey, looky who's here. It's Barb. She just showed up.
Our studio audience.
Our
well-paid studio audience, yes. Okay, anyhow, let's get going. Now, normally, what I do is I explain to our guest what I'm about to do. I'm coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse with the good, the bad, and the bovine. But because I don't have a guest, but we do have Barb, and she's heard this 100 times. But I'm going to tell her again because she might be dense. Might not. I think she's sharper than I am. Oh, and she's got muscles. Oh, she's like Popeye. Anyhow, we're going to start out. Oh, I'll explain the premise here. I start out with today, which is the 31st of January, the last day of this rotten month. And I go back 3 days in time, not in any particular space, time, or whatever, or continuum. And then I go forward 3 days in time, but not into the future, still into the past. And I'm going to start out with January 28, 1671. And this particular date is for you, Harry.
Thank you. I was not there.
You weren't there. Well, you were there in spirit. Because the Welsh pirate, Henry Morgan,
Yar,
captures Panama City from the Spanish.
You know how he did that? It's so great on how he did it. And realizing he was not going to be able to attack by sea, he and his band of cutthroats get off the boat and sneak around Panama City. And that's how they make their attack. They go chopping through all the foliage around there and stuff. Oh, man. Yeah.
See, you know, somebody's going to say, what the hell's that got to do with the West?
It doesn't.
Well, no, it does, in a sense, because if you think about it, the Comancheros were the pirates of the plains.
Okay, I'll go
and
with
so
that.
These were like the forerunners of those. Also, just to show you that things worked out pretty good for Henry Morgan. He ended up lieutenant governor of Jamaica.
There you go.
That's what you call job security.
All the guns really pointed at the ocean?
All the guns pointed at the ocean.
Yeah.
You don't know about
what,
that other battle that...
What, the battle of...
Lawrence of Arabia taking Aqaba.
Okay.
Aqaba.
That's in Africa.
Attack from the back.
Okay.
Hey,
that's gotcha.
That's the way in the premise of our today's show. That's how most of the killings happened in the West,
yep,
from the back.
Yep.
Anyhow, we're going to move up a little bit in time here to January 29, 1945. Thomas William Selleck. That may name sound a little familiar. He made his TV debut in a Lancer episode called Death Bait. He's better known for Magnum, and the only reason I mention Magnum, because it is a detective show, is they did an episode called Paniolo, which took place on the big island, on the big ranch, and it was a cowboy episode. It had Paniolo cowboys hooping and hollering, and it was a good episode.
Well, I'd imagine that. I happen to have a some bump music of our favorite Hawaiian cowboys.
Oh, good. Paniolo movies. I love that. Slap guitar. Anyhow, he went on to do a little picture called The Sack. It's a TV miniseries. Then he did another series called The Concrete Cowboys with Jerry Reed, which was kind of lame. It was two cowboys. Somehow they ended up in Florida with the detective agency. I still can't figure that one out. Then he went on to do Shadow Riders, and then probably the piece de resistance of his career, Quigley Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, to me, it's one of the great westerns of all time. He went on and did this over here around Patagonia. He did a little show called Ruby Jean and Joe. Wasn't bad. He did another TV western for that rich guy down there. Last Stand at Sabre River, Crossfire Trail, and then he did the Monty Walsh remake, which is a great movie, but it pales compared to the first one, as far mm-hmm. as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Now, on January 30th, we're getting close to the end of the month, Eugene Allen Hackman, that's Gene Hackman, who just died a miserable death here at the end of the year last year. His possible first Western credit was an Iron Horse episode, Leopards Try, But Leopards Can't. He went on to do a feature called The Hunting Party, the European Euro-Western, Bloodier than all heck, and really squirrely, that's all I can say, just squirrely western. And then he did Zandy's Bride, a quiet little, very realistic little western, which I think is kind of a minor classic. And he did Bite the Bullet, which I loved. It was about a cross-country horse race, all great cast in it. He did an Alaska film called Eureka, which is kind of a head-scratcher. Then he went on to do Unforgiven, which gathered him his second Oscar as the Best Supporting Oscar, his Bad Bill. And then he did Geronimo, an American Legend. He did Pop Earp and Wyatt Earp, or Dad Earp, or he was Earp's daddy. And then the last Western he did was The Quick and the Dead. And that was an interesting film. I liked it, even though it was quirky. I think that's why I liked it. And I don't know what I was going to say. Okay. January 31st, Gouverneur, that's not Governor, Gouverneur mm-hmm. Morris, mm-hmm. founding father, penned a preamble to the U.S. Constitution, signed the Articles of Confederation, and the U.S. Constitution. And just to throw it in as a cherry on top of the ice cream, John Ford was born on that day. One of my favorite all-time great, wonderful, spectacular directors.
And it's also my grandson's birthday. One of my grandsons.
Birthday. I know. Say hello to your grandson.
I will. I'll let him know that he was born the same day John Ford was.
That might be inspiring. He's a filmmaker, too.
No.
Oh, that's the other
That's my nephew.
Oh, okay.
And the younger grandson is a filmmaker.
Yeah. Train man.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now moving into the future, as far as months go, February 1st, but still in the past in 1893, Thomas Edison completed his world's first movie studio in West Orange, New Jersey. Just think what he started. All of this, it's all his fault. And now, this is February 2nd, every year. This is my favorite holiday.
That would be Groundhog Day.
Exactly. I think that's the most important day of all because it's the Everyman Common Hog Day. And it's done every year at Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and it's based on an old Dutch superstition. Now we're going to finish this whole silliness up with February 3rd, 1841. Horace Greeley, newspaper editor and publisher, did not say, "Go west, young man." He said, "Go to the west." You get it straight? Get it. Go to the west.
When in doubt, publish the...
publish. The legend.
The legend.
That's right, yeah. Thank you, Barb. It's a good thing we got her here.
I know.
Keep us on the straight and narrow.
She's got the one mind that we desperately need.
The one stable. The one stable mind.
All right, let's get into this. We know that Hollywood makes all kinds of mistakes in all genres.
I've made a few of them myself.
Well, in all genres. And, you know, okay, that's fine. But because we're talking the Westerns, we like the Westerns, and so that's what we're going to do is pick on them. And I will also let our listeners know to the live stream, I'm monitoring our Instagram page, our Facebook page, and our email, voicesofthewest@gmail.com, should you have any comments that you'd like to throw our way, or not.
Blast us.
Yeah, blast us, whatever. It don't matter. It don't matter.
Because this is all in fun. Tongue in cheek.
Well.
And knife in the back.
Not really.
Not, yeah.
I'm taking a lot of this personally, and I'm going to try to cause a thing.
Yeah. So, one of the things that, well, there's all kinds of things that happen in terms of what Hollywood does wrong regarding Westerns. Todd Roberts, why don't you start it out?
Okay. That's very generous. No, that's why I love you so much.
Checks in the mail.
By the way, Barb, so happy to have you with us. It just makes me happy. I have a smile on my face when I hear you with us.
Yeah.
So let me start off by just saying I have a motto, or should I say a skill-y little thing that I say about subjects, which... it's kind of a preference, but not all Indians live in teepees.
Not all Indians live in teepees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how often do we see any tribe that Hollywood puts on a movie, they're in a teepee? Well, when they're supposed to be in a wiki-up or a long home or a lodge house or whatever.
Yeah, specifically the Navajo did not live in teepees.
Wiki-ups. Hogans.
Hogans, yeah.
Well, they lived in Hogan's, and prior to that, they lived in the ruins, White House room, shipping.
Pueblos.
Yeah, Pueblos.
Rock cities, adobe cities, they
rock
built.
City, yeah. So I say that to throw that out there because Hollywood creates this myth, and everybody, this is the truth. How dare you contradict it? So, the first one I want to say that is so obvious is cowboy hats. The biggest myth is that the bad guys wore black hats and the good guys wore white hats. It's exactly the opposite. The bad guys, not all bad guys, but more often than not, they were out on the trail, they were in the sun, so they were wearing a white hat to reflect the heat. The black hats were worn by town constables and marshals, sheriffs, they were inside. Take their hat off. They get out of the sun. And so on. So rarely was it the other way. It was, that was how it was. Look at all the old photographs of cowboys around the track, and they're all in white. That's my first one.
Okay.
Well, once we're on hats, let's dig a little deeper here. Yeah, movie cowboy hats are not like those worn in the actual West. Now, Stetson is introduced in 1865. It was popular, but looked a lot different from the later Stetsons. The early Stetsons had flat brims, no crease in the crown, and many different hats were worn. The most, what was worn more than anything was the bowler or, what do you call it, derby hats, which Harry has one. The sombreros in the Southwest, they were predominant. Flat caps, military caps, beaver pelt hats, top hats, believe it or not. And you see them a couple of John Ford movies. And the bowler or the derby was the most popular and versatile.
And it was written that by this author that he believed The bowler is the hat that won the West.
I'll give you another thing, because Harry knows I've been harping on this of late. But all of a sudden, for some reason, hats started driving me nuts. I was watching Lonesome Dove, and great hats, They get beat up and worn, except for Gus McRae's hat. It looks just as good in the end as it did in the beginning. And that chapped my hide. The other thing, too, though, is I'll watch these things, and you see it. Tom Selleck wears some of the best-looking hats. They're not authentic, but they look cowboy and all heck. But if you really look at them, they're aged, they've got sweat stains and everything. But if you look them real close, you notice they're just as stiff as a board. They're just as stiff as a brand-new hat, which is what they are. And that's my rant on hats.
Go ahead, Todd.
How true, Tucker? You know, let me extend this. Hollywood gets wrong all the time. The hat should be worn and the gun should be new. Because a Western in 1880, that pistol was relatively new. That rifle, that shotgun was relatively new. It's not all dark and dirty or rusted or brown or whatever. Plus, that a rusty button won't work. Mm-hmm. Why would you shoot it? So Hollywood does that all the time. The guns are beat up. The hats are broken.
Well, yeah. You know, one further thing, too, about the hats is that, especially you watch the older Westerns, and everybody's got their hat on the back of their head, not because that's the way they want to wear them, that's the way the cameraman wants them so he can see their faces.
Sure.
And that, you know, again, sometimes it works. You know, Leo Gordon, he looks like the kind of guy that put the hat on the back of his head because he's cocky. But then you got other guys in there that, you know, I like it. You know, you got to give credit to people like Selleck and like Sam and all those guys. If the cameraman said, tilt your head back, he'd say, put a light under it. You know, they knew what it was about. The other thing, though, again, speaking of hats, when these guys would take their hat off, you didn't have that deep, dark tan just above the eyebrows and that fish belly the rest of the way up to the hairline, which anybody that's outside all the time wearing a cowboy hat has that fish belly up on the top of their
forehead. Of course. Here's another myth about Westerns. And those tumbleweeds that you see all over the damn place, they did not blow all over the damn place. The tumbleweed is Russian thistle, and it didn't get to the United States until 1870. The seeds. So, you know, blame the birds if you want, because birds do have a habit of bringing all kinds of seeds everywhere, and then they do their stuff and drops, and there we go, and it starts.
Just to add to that, they figured the first sack of seed, which came over from Russia, was in the where is it here? And flax
South,
seed
in yeah. South Dakota, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And of course, you know that seed went all over the country because the farmers spread west; they took it with them.
Yep. Yeah, okay, hey.
I know.
We are about time here for...
Let's tumble into a commercial.
Yeah, I have to find out where I'm at. I am here, so I don't know exactly where else
you?
I am. I think I'm here. Anywho, we need to take our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts with you. We'll be back with much more of the program, Movie Saturday, after this.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallion.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
26 men, carefully chosen for their courage and ability, formed the Arizona Rangers. Fame and public acclaim was not their objective. This is perhaps why the story of these 26 men has never been told until now.
This is the Voices of the West.
I have no clue what they are singing. Do you understand Hawaiian? Do you understand Hawaiian?
Yeah, what they're saying is, get out of the way, the cattle are stampeding.
Welcome back to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander with you, Bunker de France with you, in Los Angeles. It is Todd Roberts, and we're streaming live to you from the White Stallion Ranch today. It's Movie Saturday, and our topic for Movie Saturday is what Hollywood does wrong when it comes to Westerns. And believe me, it is a lot. A lot.
History is tricky.
History can be, tricky when it wants to be.
And, you know, it's one of the things that we need to preface is that a lot of this stuff is out, you know, incidents that aren't necessarily the norm, but they're kind of amusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Cowboys were not often clean shaved.
Oh, I got that one too.
You can bank on that because when the cowboys come to town, they're always looking for
the first place,
the parlor, the shave parlor, to get cleaned up.
A bath and a shave.
Bath and shade.
And then the second place the younger cowboys went was the general store to get a can of peaches or tomatoes.
Yep.
Get their sugar on.
Yep.
And, you know, this is the thing, too, about that, is that shaving and other matters of grooming or hygiene was a luxury for them on the trail.
Sure.
And you go into the towns, and most of the saloons had a community bar rag that had several of them along there where you could wipe off the foam or the blood,
sure,
or whatever, tobacco,
yeah,
juice. And some of them, a lot of them, they would, especially in cow camps and stuff, would share toothbrushes. They had dental hygiene problems like you wouldn't believe.
I would imagine so. Lots of perhaps disease.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
VD.
And dysentery and all kinds of stuff.
Bed bugs were popular.
Oh, even in your roll, huh?
Yeah.
Out your roll.
We could almost do a show on nicknames of bed bugs. They called those little rascals.
All right, here's another one. Cowboys were not all white.
That's number one on my list.
Shocker.
Number one on my list.
You know, you watch every classic Western, you come away with the idea that cowboys were all white men. Biggest misconception that movies have fostered over the year, and here's why. In reality, up to a quarter of working cowboys were black,
mm-hmm,
and a fair number of them would have been enslaved people who were recently freed.
And that's why they called them cowboys.
And many others were from Mexico or from South American countries. And so, you know, that's...
Well, just to add to that, you know, here in the Southwest, up until the Gadsden Purchase, they were all vaqueros, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, after the Gadsden Purchase, some of the Texans started coming in. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, you didn't call the white guys cowboys back then. That was been an insult. You got either beat up or shot. There was a lot of Indian cowboys, because not all Indians were warlike, and a lot of them adapted really fast. All ranches were always looking for people to work because they didn't pay anything. It was hard to keep people.
Todd, what do you think about all that?
It's very, very true. I will completely agree with you on both points, both of you. You know, the estimates are that you had cowboys of color that can range as high as a third of all cowboys. Mm-hmm. I've even heard numbers higher than that, mm-hmm. depending on the area you're in. But if you're going to look at the whole country nationwide, it's easily fair to say that they were a third were of color, whether they were black or they were Indian or they were of some type of Latin descent, or they could have been what you would call half-breed, mm-hmm. or breeds. So they'd be any one of those three together or combined, however you see fit. Or some were even half-white and half of
mulatto. Yeah, mulatto.
Well, think about this, too. Until the Civil War, almost anybody working cattle in Texas would have been black slaves.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's another misconception. Here's another one. Despite what you see in the movies, people did not always wear their guns around town. I know, I'm
my list.
I'm stealing your stuff there, your thunder.
That's wonderful, Harry. I'm glad.
Yeah, and, you know, the gun on your belt not only frowned upon from a lot of cities,
but it was Wichita.
Often against the law. And many towns had strictly enforced rules about carrying firearms within city limits. Visitors often had to check their guns into the local sheriff's office or their hotel as soon as they arrived. So walking into a bar or saloon sporting a revolver, a strict no-no. And in fact, the word gunslinger, that's a Hollywood invention.
Yes, it is.
It was first used in the 1920 Western Drag Harlan.
That's right. And that movie's in public domain.
Yeah, so if you can find it, go get it and watch it.
Now, here's a funny thing, though.
I wanted to take that point a little further.
Sure.
It's the terminology, you're right, we're not gunslinger. In the day, back in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, 1900s, all the way to the turn of the century, you had two different types of people who lived and worked and died by guns. You had gun men, and you had gun fighters.
Oh. And you had pistoleros and shooters.
Yeah.
Well, I'm speaking that's true for the Latin contingency, but in your white Anglo majority, you had white, or American in general, you had gun men who were bad guys.
Generally hired.
John Wesley Carton, Jesse James, outlaws. They were gunmen. They were a man of the gun, literally, if you want to dissect it. They were men of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had gun fighters, who were people like Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson and, you know, Dallas Stoudemire and so on, who were gun fighters. They fought with guns, but they were not gunmen.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't steal with people from people with a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't outlaws. So that is a difference. And a lot of times those terminologies are commingled, and everybody's in a movie, everyone is a gunman or everyone is a gunfighter.
Everyone's wearing a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the great film with Gregory Peck and Anthony Mann.
Yes.
And it's called The Gunfighter. And I love the film. It's a great, beautiful movie.
It's a classic.
absolute classic. But he is not a gunfighter. He is a gunman. And he never will be, and he never would have been, a gunman, a gunfighter. He was a gunman. He was an outlaw. He lived and died by the gun.
You know, this is a footnote to all that, is that while there was all this, a lot of gun banning in the towns, the pocket pistol was very widespread, and you could probably find in that bar that didn't have any handguns on the belt a dozen pocket pistols.
Well, your gamblers obviously carried a pocket pistol. Tiny Derringer, you know.
Hey, Wyatt Earp carried a pocket pistol.
Yeah.
But it was a big pistol.
Well, and well, that's right. He did carry it in a pocket. I mean, there were pepper boxes out there that people would carry in their coat pockets. And the ladies as well.
Ladies' friend, yeah.
The ladies as well, they would have, well, we call it the muff pistol. And, you know,
love that phrase.
That's the thing that they put their hands into, the fur thing. But it doesn't always have to mean that.
No. And a lot of them were just little single shots.
Ask any pirate.
Yeah, single shots. Well, here's another thing, too. You know, the violence in the towns, you know, that's the thing. It's like every town is violent.
Yeah.
Every town, when the gang shows up, everybody runs inside and hides. Back then, everybody had a gun, and they'd been either Civil War veterans, Indian fighters, or hunters. And I don't think they would have run and hide. But here's the thing. Like cities like Dodge and Tombstone, the homicide rate, on average, was less than 1%. Now, mining towns might have been higher due to the less strict gun laws. Shootouts happened, but were rare. But systematic violence against the Plains Indians was on a massive scale due to government warfare. And the confrontation between cowboys and Indians was very rare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got it all backwards.
Go ahead.
You know, I mean, there were towns that there were plenty of towns that you had, the violence was as high as it is today in modern cities.
Yeah.
Other towns, there was very little. But getting back to your point, Becker, it's such a great point about townspeople running and hiding. These were pioneers. These are people who had braved the weather, animals who could eat them, Indians, outlaws. You think they're going to be afraid of one or two outlaws coming into their town?
Not likely.
Roderick Crawford driving into town.
Yeah.
10-4, 10-4.
These people were fearless, including the women.
So, mm-hmm.
And it's pretty obvious when we say that, people run and hide. That's pretty much not true. James Younger gang got their asses shot off.
Yeah.
And so did the Dalton gang.
Big time.
Got their asses shot off.
Yep.
And then chased down.
Yep. Big time.
Chased down by townspeople.
Yep.
Not to mention, and this will go more to our story of our show, the theme of our show, the title of our show, which is What Hollywood Gets Wrong. Howard Hawke made Rio Bravo in direct protest.
Mm-hmm.
If you can look up the interview on YouTube, he says, you know, years ago Greg Peck made this movie called High Noon, and it's, you know, I watched it and I love Greg Peck, and you know, it was embarrassing for me to watch Greg Peck walk around town begging people for help. No true professional would ever do that.
No.
And,
that's not Gary Cooper, but
it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And Gary Cooper, you know, so both films are wrong. Rio Bravo's wrong in that you wouldn't go around town asking for help, and or the townspeople wouldn't volunteer. People weren't chicken. And the people who are chicken in High Noon is also not true. Mm-hmm. Many people stepped up and volunteered.
Sure.
They were happy to do it. So, you know, again, Hollywood gets it wrong. Thank you.
Well, you okay. know, too, and Ford kind of corrected that when he did El Dorado, because he had the ranchers coming in to help Wayne, in the
yes.
final.
Okay, we need to take our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander Bunker to France. Todd Roberts with you in our studio audience, Barb Whitus. We appreciate that. We will be back with much more of our show right after these very important messages. Stay tuned.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ed.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Fellas flew like a turkey. Well, they shouldn't have run. They shouldn't have run. Sing! Well, how'd you like to kiss my sister's black cat's ass?
This is the Voices of the West.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, no, Bunker in France. No. They got him. They got Bunker and Todd Roberts. Yeah. We are back with the program, What Hollywood Gets Wrong. And that drop was from our friend of the show, late Bo Hopkins.
Yes.
And what a great movie that was. Yeah. All right, we got, where am I at here?
I've got some facts here. I'm going to kind of, I may stumble over a couple that we already did, but I think this really kind of fills in a lot of cracks. Now, hard labor, it was generally a 108-hour work week for 30 and Found. In 1883, they had the Great Cowboy Strike. Hundreds and hundreds of cowboys organized for better pay. But this is the way the life really actually was. Months without bathing, lice, shared toothbrushes, the food was a lot of times rock-hard hardtack, tough salted pork, beans, and no steaks. That was money in the rancher's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mentioned this before, bowler hats, but wool pants trumped denim. In fact, if you look at all the pictures and everything, almost everybody wore wool pants back then, or gabardine, which was a type of wool. Now, I mentioned bowler hats, okay. Guns, mentioned that. Real gunfights were mostly chaotic, drunken brawls and choking black powder smoke.
Let's take the promo picture for today's show that I posted on Facebook and Instagram. It's the opening scene of Matt Dillon facing...
Orville Jello.
Yeah. And those things did not happen. Todd, you mentioned to me there are only two documented gunfights of that nature.
Pick off.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so now everybody's going to start writing letters and throwing
good.
Their hands up in the air and putting their hats down on the ground and stamping on them.
Good.
Doing silly things.
Good.
Let's clarify. Let Todd... Just in case anyone's overly offended,
we'll send you Todd's number.
Yeah, great. I'm not home. So, first of all, there are only two documented cases where somebody said, "We're going to meet in the street," or "We're called out into the street by another person." You know, bring your guns. In other words, I'm paraphrasing. Both involve Wilbur Hickok. The first one is with Dave Tutt over his watch, which he had won in a poker game. And when he bet it in the poker game, Hickok told him, you know, if you win, do not wear this watch around. It is yours for the moment, but I will be buying it back from you in one, or winning it back from you. Do not wear it. It is not yours. And Todd, who was kind of an unfriendly fella, decided that he would wear it around town. And Hickok kept telling him, don't do that.
Braggadocious.
And finally, after a day or two, he saw him, and he saw him wearing it. It was displayed with the chain outside his vest and all that. And he pulled his pistols. I think Tut pulled first.
He did.
But Hickok pulled his pistols quick enough to where he got one shot off at over 50 feet, and some say it's 70 feet, right through the heart, and he was killed dead instantly.
Standing.
The other one is with Hickok and a gentleman in a wheelchair, and the guy was out in the street, and he started calling out to Hickok, you know, Wilbur Hickok, get out here. I'm going to face you down. I'm going to kill you. So on and so on. And he wasn't coming out of the bar. And he kept yelling, you know, what are you, chicken? And he was taunting him endlessly. And what held Hickok up was he couldn't find, he was told by people, there's a man in a wheelchair in the street calling you out. Well, he couldn't find, he had to find a chair or a wheelchair. He had the guys make it fair, and he had his friends tie him down in it so that he couldn't get out. So they had a gun battle in chairs in the street, and he killed that man too. The man said Hickok had killed his son. Now, many of you are going to say that, the street fight between the Earps and the Cowboys was that it wasn't, they went down there to disarm them. For all you people who are anti-Earpies, Cowboys who say, well, they went down they went down there to kill him and they were unarmed. If they were unarmed, how did Virgil, Morgan, and Doc all get wounded?
Number one.
But beyond that, you know, you will say, so there are those that will say, oh, well, God, you're forgetting about when John Wesley Harden got killed. He was standing in a bar with his back to door, and Dallas Stoudemire walked in and shot him through the back of the head.
Yeah.
He did, because he knew he was hunting for him.
That's right.
And he said he let it be known with people who knew Harden, tell him to stay away from town. Because he said so many things that if I see him, there's going to be trouble. It's that simple. So,
those are gun scenes.
Yes.
But back to
romantic. But they're not between two people standing out in the street saying,
"Yeah,
I'm gonna hire you."
Back to Bill Hickok for a moment. We know that he used 1851 Colt Navy Colts for his firearms, and he cleaned them daily, of course,
And reloaded them.
And reloaded them. Are you aware if he was still shooting black powder, or did he have a conversion cartridge?
No, he was still shooting the cap and balls.
He was still shooting cap and ball.
I believe, yes, he was shooting cap and ball.
Okay.
And I think that it's also important to remember, for anyone who portrays Hickok, or, you know, if you reference him, you never really see him without a big knife.
Really? Yeah. Uh-huh. That's true, too.
You know,
I'm just saying, the distance at shooting at shooting Tut 50 feet, maybe 70 feet, with black powder. Man, he had to have a good load in there.
He practiced all the time.
Well, of course he did.
And he hand loaded, too.
He had to, well, yeah. I mean, that's what I do, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he had seen true gun battle in the Civil War.
Sure.
And don't forget, prior to all that, with Gaines.
And he was a sniper in the Civil War.
What made him so notoriously famous was the gun battle with three gentlemen who came upon a house. They knew he was inside, and they all basically had said, "We'll all go in different ways, and we'll you know, get him in a crossfire." He killed all three,
and it was wasn't all guns. Some of it was knife.
Wounded one.
All right.
Before we really
was the real deal.
Well, since we're on the topic of guns,
I haven't finished my myths here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
go for
all right.
it, Bunker.
That's all right. Because there's some goodies in here, and I mentioned disease in the saloons with tuberculosis spreading spit tunes. This is a fact. Folks were much skinnier back then. Their body types were different than they are from today. Clothes were not nice and new and brand new. They were well worn. They were a lot of times ill fitting, not clean. It was a lack of perfectly pearl-white teeth, like all the stars have. gunfight at high noon, those things didn't happen. This is the main point I wanted to get to. Bank robberies. There were only 8 confirmed bank robberies in the Old West era. That's 1859 to 1890. Only 8 bank robberies.
Wow, really?
Hollywood would do more than that in a year.
I guess so.
Especially in the beach.
Well, what I'm going to do is take an early break here.
Okay.
Or take our break early so that I can talk about guns.
Oh, talk about guns.
Because I like my weapons. And
love your weapons.
Yeah. And so we're gonna take care of that stuff here in just a moment, as soon as I find where the hell I am on the damn computer. You know, it's sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. It's Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you, and our topic for Movie Saturday, what Hollywood does wrong, or has done wrong, with Westerns. We'll be back.
Cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallion.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
You guys ought to have your heads examined, pulling a boner like that. Why didn't you finish him off when you had a chance?
We would have, but how did we know it was the fakest kid?
Yeah, we thought it was on the sheriff's man.
That's right, boss. We didn't want to get popped with the goods, so we beat it.
This is the Voices of the West.
Me and my pony are free. Singing a song of the same. Never care where we be. We never work far away.
Always good to have some Jimmy Wakely on the program here.
Yeah, how he sounds like the old classic guys.
I know.
Nolan and,
I know.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West here. Alexander Bunker DeFrance, Todd Roberts with you. Our studio audience, Barb Whitus, is also with us. And we're streaming live to you from the White Stallion Ranch. And we're talking about what Hollywood does wrong regarding Westerns. And I think the firearms is one of the big things that Hollywood screws around with, and they really shouldn't. Never-ending magazines and those 16-shot revolvers. By golly, how do I get one of those?
Yeah, the BAR six-gun.
No. Yeah, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't understand why that happens.
Well, it's like ricochets.
The
guy's hiding behind a rock. It ricochets right in front of him, and his head's up above the ricochet.
Every third shot is a ricochet as well, or fourth shot, you know. And here's another one. Racking pump shotguns repeatedly. Why?
If you can't hit anything. You can't hit anything.
If you got around the damn thing, expel the round and then rack the damn gun.
I saw something the other day with
this ain't rocket surgery.
Yeah, I saw something the other day with Paul Richards. He was having a shootout with, I can't remember who it was, I think Roy Calhoun, and he's firing from the hip and running around.
Hip fire, that's another one, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, a lot of those guys were instinct shooters, but they didn't fire from the hip. They still pulled it up like looking down your finger shooting.
People flying backwards when they're shot.
That's
a Hollywood trick. I've never been shot, but I have seen people be shot, and usually what happens is they crumple.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was stationed in the ASW staff, one of the guys, when they would do symposiums for other people coming in, he would go over to Sync Pack Fleet and pick up film footage so that they could show. Well, he would pick up extra stuff, and when I was all over, a bunch of us would go over, and we would watch actual combat footage. And it literally was like, you just imagine a man on a puppet string,
yeah,
and somebody cut the strings.
Yeah.
Some of them would just sit down and they'd be sitting up,
yeah,
on their butt.
Yeah.
They're deader than a doornail.
Yeah, another one is the types of firearms that are used in some Westerns. if you're going to do a Western about the prior to 1860, it must be black powder firearms that are used. It must be. Because, yes, Sam Colt invented the Dragoon, but that was for the Texas Rangers. And that was not something you could go into the general store and purchase. First of all, because one of, here's another reason why, the damn thing was so heavy, it was usually mounted on the the pommel.
And then he came out with Patterson, and that was still heavy.
Yeah, so, you gotta...
And Schofield.
You gotta, if you're gonna do black powder, if you're gonna do something before 1860, you better have it black powder.
And, you know, a lot of times those guys were carrying, they weren't carrying a revolver, they were carrying a single or double shot percussion.
Exactly. Well, or a flintlock.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those things were still around.
Because, and here's the other thing, following up on what you're saying, is that an awful lot of the firearms that were in the West were war surplus from Europe after the Civil War.
Yeah. Todd, what do you want to say about that?
Well, it's absolutely true. You know, that a lot of the weapons came, you know, guys carried weapons they were comfortable with. So if you had served in the army, you know, you carried the weapon you were trained on, whether it was a single shot Spencer or a six shooter of any type. That's you continued to carry that weapon because you don't go into battle with an untested weapon on yourself.
Familiarity.
Exactly.
At the same time, you know, it's important to remember that there were people out there trying to figure it out. You know, let me try this, let me try that, just like with all human nature.
Improving firearms.
So, yeah, trying to acquaint themselves and so forth. You know, when everybody's using the same pistol, when we know there are so many different, whether it's a Mason or it's a Remington or it's a Colt or it's a Smith & Wesson, you know, they're all those different, those guns, not to mention a Lightning, a single action, a 7, a 4.5, a 4.75, a 5.5. You know, we need a little more shallow. Like I said, not all Indians live in teepees. Well, not all ranch hands and cowboys carried single action Colt 5.5-inch barrel.
No, but, you know, while we have poo-pooed what Hollywood has done to the Western genre with all of the stuff that we've talked about this past hour, fact of the matter is, we enjoy the entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, you know, on the same line, too, what Todd's talking about, being with the gun rigs, you know, the Buscadero holster, which didn't come along until the 20s in the movies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Buscadero...
carrying your waistband. Oh, go ahead, Todd. I'm sorry.
The Buscadero did exist on a very, very limited basis down in Mexico. It's a Mexican word, Spanish word, Buscadero.
Yep.
But that gun belt was not perfected, number one, nor was it mass-produced until Edward Bolin of the Bolin Saddle Company made it to Palmix in 1925. Now, yes, we do have that photo of Commodore Perry wearing Buscadero backwards, the gun backwards in the holster.
There's exceptions to every rule.
Ever fine.
Yeah.
You don't really see it out there. And I'll also say that, you know, when we're talking about, you know, guns, everybody wore them differently. Not everybody wore it on the one side or the other.
Nope.
You know,
most of them were wore up on the waistband.
I like cross draw.
That was the most practical, especially if you're horseback.
Some were stuck. Some were cross draws. You know, because if you were in the military, you saw a lot of guys wear cross draws.
Sure.
Because they came out of the military. That's how they were trained.
Yep.
So they kept it. That's where they were comfortable. So they stayed in that same mode.
Now here's the other thing too.
Like to change it. And by the way, let's also dispel this myth. Let me really upset some people. No real gun spun his guns. Or trick, you know, throwing their guns up in the air, spinning them That only happened in moments of the by gun bad guys, outlaws, who were, or some lawmen too, who were in a pinch, and they had no way to, they had to try something as a last resort to get on the other bad guy, or whoever their adversary was. But to see all this spinning and tricks, and I mean, you want to go shoot your foot off? Please go outside by yourself, and I'll stay here in the house behind the.
All right, that's all the time we've got for this afternoon.
We didn't even get to talk about rifles being more popular.
Oh, I know, rifles.
Hey, one last thing, though.
There's a buttload of things that we didn't get a chance to talk about.
I just want one last thing. In the 1900s, the turn of the century, the most popular sport in America was shooting.
Mm.
And it was mostly rifles and shotguns. Mm-hmm. And
that's right.
And with that, we have to say thanks for listening, everybody, to this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. Our studio audience, Barb Whitus, thank you for being here. And we'll talk at you next time.
78, 79, 80 O's, and I'm wearing an improper cowboy hat today. It's more of a modern job. I'm sorry.
So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.